Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? My guest today is Matt Ward. After university, he moved to Thailand and gave himself the goal of starting an Amazon business, which he'd build and sell for $1 million in 1 year. And then he did it, which is pretty amazing. And now he runs an investment syndicate and two podcasts, and he wants to accelerate future technologies such as life extension and solving climate change. He's a really fascinating individual who, despite only being 27, has a wife, a dog, a list of achievements longer than most people's lifetimes, and it feels like he's only just getting started. You can tell that his brain works at a million miles an hour, and it was an honor to just learn from someone so intelligent. So now let's jump into the episode where he introduces what he's up to with his own podcast. I would just note that since recording this podcast, he has renamed his podcast from Fringe FM to Disruptors due to legal reasons. So every time you hear the word fringe, imagine he's saying Disruptors.
Hey guys, so my podcast Fringe FM, imagine a long form TED. TED is great, I love watching them, but they're 5 to 15 minutes of something fascinating. You can't get very deep, and I never liked that. So what we do is we dive into those same topics: AI, cryptocurrency, space, robotics, human augmentation, longevity. We look at the far out technologies and that are transforming our world today, even though we don't realize it, and then talk about the ethics and direction that those are headed, so we can ideally not end up in a Hollywood dystopia and instead have an awesome world, which is more or less what we're headed towards. And that's kind of the theme of the podcast, to get really interesting people focused on really interesting problems that not enough people know about and try to disseminate that information.
That sounds amazing. And I've really enjoyed listening to the episodes. It's a really cool concept and super interesting to just go deep with some scientists and TED speakers. Can you just quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah, my background is e-commerce, built and sold a couple companies. One mattered, two didn't. Made enough money from one of those to get into angel investing and have some time on my hands. So I've been working with quite a bit with startups, primarily in the advisor growth hacking type mindset of helping them grow quicker, faster, better, and overcome some of the problems with playing on platforms, etc. From that, I've gotten more into the futurism and technology side of things because that's even more interesting for me. And I'm kind of an ADD person that likes to do a lot of things at once. So I also run The Syndicate. If you go to thesyndicate.vc, it's a podcast on angel investing, early stage tech companies, and all of that jazz, and run an investment syndicate related to that.
Wow, that's quite a few things. Cool. How old are you, by the way?
What would you guess?
Crap. I'd say, looking at you, like 30, but then from what you've just said that you do, I'd be like 30. Well, if I couldn't see you at all, I'd be like, yeah, 40, 50. But yeah, I'm guessing somewhere like 35.
It's the hair. I'm losing it a little bit. 27.
No way.
Yeah.
What?
I stay busy.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. When I get into something, I become obsessed with it. Just really, really focus on that. Long way to go still.
Kind of the way to be successful. But you say you focus, but then it says that you're doing like three or four different
things. Yeah, that focus thing is something I struggle with. So my big focus is Fringe FM. The other stuff is tangential to that, or things that I've done in the past that still do a little bit of, because I don't have the time to manage it all myself.
So you gave me quite a few different things to talk about that you wanted to cover. One was startups and their importance in the world today.
So what I'm seeing, especially from a US-centric view, is that governments around the world are failing their citizens. They're becoming bigger, larger, more expensive, but less up to date with what's happening. You can just watch the congressional hearings with Zuckerberg in Congress and see that they're completely clueless and don't know what they're doing. You can see the FCC repealing net neutrality and basically being bought and sold by cable companies to see that they don't care about their constituents that much. Corporations have a similar problem. If they're public, they have to think about quarterly earnings. That's what matters. Something like 60 to 80% of Fortune 500 CEOs have said off the record that they would forego investing in long-term guaranteed future growth to have better short-term numbers so that they can have bigger bonuses, because that's how their bonus structures are incentivized. And that's just a broken system where they're not focused on growth and innovation. They're focused on the short-term gains. And that's what the stock market does, unfortunately, because it is so fast and so readily happening that that's the only thing they focus on. Startups at least have a longer time horizon. So corporations aren't really incentivized to think long-term. It doesn't help at all when you have short sellers as well. You look at what Tesla's doing. They're trying to change the world, and you have half the finance industry shorting Tesla, A, because it's a hard business model, but B, because they think they can make money, even though it's trying to improve the world for all of us. It's pushed us towards electric vehicles. And I think that's total f***ing what I see with startups is they're audacious. They're not generally into the system as much as corporates. They're willing to think outside the box, and they're willing to take bigger risks. And I think that's what we need going forward. The lean startup type model of looking at a problem, thinking about different solutions, and then iteratively testing, I don't see that happening at all in government and very little in corporations. And I think that's what we need going forward, is much more of this iterative improvement as we go forward into the next era, especially as things move faster.
So are you trying to inspire startups to do these things, or do you want to learn the knowledge to build your own startup to help accelerate us into the future?
I believe in exponentials. Building something can be great, but it's better if you can inspire more builders, or if you can invest in more builders, because then you instantly have a higher leverage arm, so to speak. It's like going to Africa to build houses. That's great and all. But if you can make a bunch of money and then empower 1,000 businesses in Africa building houses, suddenly your impact is exponentially larger. And that's kind of what I like to think about. One of the goals I have from Fringe FM is to directly lead to the creation of 1,000 startups that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And I know that's bold and audacious, and we have a long way to go. But I think just the pure brute force of more startups, more people focused on innovation is important, and getting more people focused on the technologies that are coming, technologies that will change the world, are very important as well, because the more people that you have thinking about human longevity and what it means for us living longer, thinking about AI and automation and what do we do as our workforce starts to change. These type of conversations are good for regulators, they're good for startups. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm mainly focused on.
Cool. That's really interesting. So it's quite a hard one as a young guy with lots of really good ideas that you want to make happen. If you haven't had any success, you kind of just need to stop thinking about all your ideas and just focus on the one to make it happen, to then have the leverage to sort of go to people with your ideas and get all of them to do them for you.
Yeah, there's basically two ways to do it. Either you make a ton of money doing something and then you use that money to focus on the impact that you want to focus on, or you do something that's more of like the Peter Diamandis model, where when he was younger, he created the X Prize, which has led to tons of innovation and tons of teams focused on crazy outlandish projects. But that was finding someone else to fund it and then doing the impossible project right from the start. But those are the two models that I see working the best.
Yeah, you don't hear quite so many of the second option there.
Yeah, there's not as many of the second option. He's an interesting cat.
Do you think you're going more down the second option then?
I can't really compare. We have a ways to go, but I think of Fringe FM as complementary he's doing. So my goal is to go down that second path, and we'll see how that plays out.
Cool. That's fascinating. Okay, so on the subject of Fringe FM, what's been your favorite question to ask people in interviews?
My favorite question to ask is one of two things. What technology are you most excited about and why? Or what technology are you most worried about and why? And it's one of those two questions, because people always have some type of large reaction towards the future. There's positive and there's negative, but when you get the people that are the smartest folks in the world that are focused on the future day in and day out, they have insights that most of us don't have. So I don't care if you're an AI expert and I ask you what you're worried about and you tell me climate change and you're able to explain why, you have a perspective that most people don't have, that most people don't hear. And that's where I think it gets interesting, is when you get people that are focused on one thing, talking about things that are related but outside their expertise. That's when you get those cool spontaneous happenings that wouldn't normally happen.
Sounds like a lot of really good conversations, right? So I'm not sure if you've got the right expertise, but maybe you kind of have absorbed some of these best answers, at which point it would be good to ask, what is the technology that excites you most and why?
I'm most excited, I would say, about the longevity stuff, primarily because would love to live longer, right? I think where we're at right now with understanding the human body, understanding aging, understanding the role of nutrition, gut health, genetics, but even more importantly, epigenetics, in terms of how your DNA is turned on and off, how that's affected by your gut. But then there's some of the stuff that you could call fringe that's actually not so fringe anymore, that's really starting to come into the mainstream of technologies to enhance the aging process, either by helping you be healthier, live longer, or kind of slow down the damage, so to speak. Imagine if you had pipes and your pipes get built up with, they get clogged, your arteries from cholesterol. If you could remove that clogging as it was happening, suddenly you're reducing aging. If you could have a system where you're reducing the aging that happens on the body a year for every year of technological progress, basically in a year from 2019 to 2020, the technology becomes that you can reduce aging by a year, suddenly you're at an escape velocity where you're aging 0 years per year. That gets really freaking interesting, really, really fast. And I think we're moving in that direction pretty quickly, especially with how fast things are happening. You have CRISPR, which is just fascinating. Genetic engineering, being able to copy paste different DNA sequences into different creatures at different points and control exactly what's happening. I think the biotech space is the most interesting for me.
Mm, cool. Yes, I studied biology at university and got super into all those things. It was a lovely degree to do. How did you find out about all this information? Did you study this scientifically, or did you just read all these books?
I like podcasts. So podcasts have been transformational for me in learning. And now these days I listen to podcasts at 3.5 speed when I'm at the gym or doing other things. If you go up like 10, 20% at a time, you suddenly get up there. And if you don't look at the numbers, you just kind of keep going up. You're like, okay, I can completely understand everything that's being said. Then you realize, holy shit, this is 300% speed. But in terms of learning things, I found podcasts to be great because you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. But with podcasts, you can kind of up level that average. You can find the smartest folks. That's why I run Fringe FM. You might not be around Aubrey de Grey, Isaac Arthur, all of these folks that we're having on the podcast, but now you can have them in your ears when you're running, going to the gym, doing laundry, etc., and suddenly be learning and absorbing this information. So I'm really an absorber of information. I'm not going to be the top 1% when it comes to, I've got the background, I've got the PhD, I've done the research, this is what I'm focused on. But I think if you can be the top 10%, the top 20% of multiple fields, then those come together in ways that pure single focused speciality could never compete with, if you're able to play across multiple playgrounds, so to speak.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, I have had an amendment to that quote, which is, you are the result of the five people and the books that you read the most, which then, if you kind of include in podcasts, it makes a lot of sense. On the subject of life extension, then, what are you doing to extend your life?
There's a lot of things. So basic best practices. We found out that carbs and sugar are pretty much shit for the human body. You don't process sugar. You don't process bread. You don't process a lot of the things that people are eating on a day-to-day basis. Trying to remove those from your diet, have a medium or high fat, medium, high, a medium-ish protein, and then low-carb-ish diet seems to be the best in terms of inflammation. If you think about all of the people that you know that have died lately, how many of them have died of old age? The answer is most likely almost none. All of them, or most of them, have had some type of condition, a disease, a neurological disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, something that was happening and breaking down in their body. And we're figuring out more and more that those are caused by inflammation, and that inflammation is caused primarily by inflammation in the gut. So when people are able to eat what their body is designed to handle, most of those diseases and symptoms start to go away. I'm doing a DNA test on myself to find out exactly what my body is designed to eat and not eat. There's a company called Viome, which will analyze the stuff that's in your gut, all those little critters, and see what you can process and what you can't process and how you should kind of optimize for that. I exercise pretty frequently. I eat pretty healthy. There's certain supplements I take. I had a fascinating interview with Dr. Bill Walsh of the Walsh Research Institute. Really, he realized when working in prisons that there seemed to be something very different with a lot of the folks that were in prisons that couldn't be explained by pure surroundings. So he started doing blood tests on them. And lo and behold, he came back and there were different, essentially, toxicities or issues with each of them, primarily five different problems. And it was due to different amounts of heavy metals, et cetera, in the brain, different over or under issues with methylation and how their body processed different neurotransmitters, et cetera. But I had him on the podcast and he had a fascinating stat. So he was analyzing school shooters. And of the past 50 that they analyzed, 43 of them had been recently put on an SSRI. 43 out of 50. It's not something you see reported about in the news. And I think
What's an SSRI?
Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. It's the medicine that they give people for any type of anxiety, depression, et cetera, which about 20% of the population is on right now. And 86% of the school shooter shootings happened after starting an SSRI. That seems like pretty goddamn statistical significance. But just looking into what you're taking into your body from a medicine perspective, looking at your individual biochemistry and seeing different levels that you might have off. So after doing that, I decided to do some blood tests to see what's up, what's down, and try to optimize that. And they give you test range on a blood test. They'll give you the range of like a 16-year-old to like a 95-year-old. You don't want the hormones or body of a 95-year-old. And what they found is if you give older people back to optimal levels of hormones, of different types of nutrients, et cetera, in their body starts to become younger. They start to reverse aging. So I think a lot of this stuff, even if it's not natural, will lead to the ways that people start living longer without even dealing with reducing some of the burdens of aging, et cetera. I think a lot of that technology is still coming and not here yet. But if you can live long enough, or if you can not die long enough, then you've got a pretty solid shot of living longer.
What are supplements that you're taking?
So I'm taking antioxidants, some resveratrol. That's basically the stuff that's found in red wine, but red wine has almost none of it. So drinking red wine is really not that beneficial for you.
It's the same in cocoa, because there's the studies that you should like have more cocoa, but then if you eat dark chocolate, basically you're just going to be fat. But you need to have like full of just pure.
Yeah, like 100% cocoa, like the stuff that.
Yeah, you just need to live purely on cocoa. It
tastes that horrible. I would say the big thing for health in general that people misunderstand or think completely falsely about is that food is a medicine. It goes in your body and changes you. It changes your genome. It changes what gets influenced, what doesn't get turned on in terms of genetics. I think that's a much bigger thing in terms, rather than what you're supplementing, it's what you're taking in on a day-to-day basis, because a supplement is something that's going to add positiveness, but it's not going to add a massive percentage. I take fish oil. Fish oil's got pretty good studies. I take creatine. It's probably the most studied supplement in the world for both athletic performance and then mental performance, and basically better blood flow to your brain and better use of ATP for energy. Focusing on, it seems like aging is it's very much due to mitochondria becoming less efficient. Those are the factories in your body that produce energy. So anything that you can do to make those more efficient. I take cold showers instead of hot showers. I do intermittent fasting. So I only eat for 8 hours a day. And some of these things sound kind of absurd until you start doing it. And then you realize, wow, I actually feel a lot better doing this. I have more energy doing this. Maybe there's something there. And after a few of these things, you start to realize that, wow, the rest of the population must be living like shit. Because if they're eating McDonald's, I know what I feel like when I eat junk. As you get deeper and deeper into that rabbit hole, it's like, okay, I could see how people could kind of get crazy with this, because I did keto for a while, which is basically eating super high fat, essentially no carbs. And for a while there, I was like, wow, I feel like I'm on God mode. Productivity, not hungry. I'd never done fasting before. And then I was able to do like 40 hours of no eating. That's actually really beneficial for living longer, is fasting. Basically, it forces your body into a situation where it kills the damaged cells called autophagy. And damaged cells propagate damage. So if you're able to get rid of those, it prevents other cells from becoming damaged. And that's a really, really strong correlator between living longer is cultures or people that participate in some type of fasting regime. Also seems to pop up in a lot of the world religions.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I have been sort of wanting to observe Ramadan at some point, just curious, like, but I have been fasting intermittently as well. I'm basically taking all the same things as you. It's funny. Do you cycle your creatine? As in, they say you should like have a week off and stuff, or?
They say you should. I only started it a bit more recently. We've been traveling a lot, so it's been hard for getting things and having things. So it's kind of been just take it. I've heard more recently you can only absorb about 1.5 or 2 grams at a time. So it might be better if you space it out, but it's also a pain in the ass. So I usually, I'll have a scoop of whey protein powder after working out, and I'll just put it in there.
Interesting. What about metformin? Because that's been linked to some of the benefits of fasting.
It has, but I'm always skeptical when you have to take a drug to mimic something. Oftentimes it has benefits, but that's only because we haven't figured out where the problems are yet. So I think there are a lot of, there's metformin, there's rapamycin. I wouldn't play around with those unless you've got doctor supervision, because those become much more problematic. I know there are some foods that you can eat. Basically, both of those are for lowering your blood sugar spikes, et cetera, if you eat carbohydrates. I think there's some there's some like roots and foods and stuff that you can eat that have similar effects, but that aren't chemical in nature. So that I would probably opt for those if that's the route that you're looking for. But the fasting thing, I think it's worth trying because it's something where you become mentally stronger doing it. I remember a year ago, I would never have thought that I could go 16 hours. I would never have thought that I could skip breakfast. And now I do that every single day, but I still thought there's no way that I can go a full day. And then I went a full day and it's like, wow, I feel really good. I was really focused. Let's make it a day and a half instead of a day. And then you finish it. It's like, yes, I did it. And that's something that a lot of people don't have. It makes you less dependent on food and the surroundings. It's definitely a lot easier if you're eating a ketogenic diet. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. It's not the same as climbing a mountain, but you accomplish something that's really hard that most people won't do for their entire life, that human beings were evolved to do. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I feel a bit more power over your foods and that you're choosing what and when to eat rather than it kind of deciding for you. You're not just sort of blind and going, oh crap, I'm hungry right now.
It's like meditating with food, just having a better control of yourself.
Like there's, if you get these sort of hunger pains, but then they don't really get any worse and they can just kind of sit there and go in the side and you kind of just ignore them and life's fine and concentrate. It's good. Okay. Anyway, back to the favorite questions. We've finally gone through the longevity stuff. So what are you scared by in the future and why?
Oh, I would say there's a lot of things. I think the biggest problems are basically people think too short term. We talked about a little before with the stock market. It's even worse with governments. We just had our elections in the US. And of course, we have 4-year cycles. So what will work for a year or two, and then we'll spend the next 2 years campaigning, i.e. taking money from large donors so that we can be corrupted by corporations, et cetera. I'm very skeptical of the entire political system. I think in the not too distant future, we're going to need to either rewrite or change that in some way. I would love a random democracy where you just have random people that get chosen to do things. And then we randomly select new people each year, because the people we have, they become so corrupt just to get to where they are that we have problems going forward. I'm worried about people in the anti-science movement. You have more and more people that feel disenfranchised by the world and are trying to go backwards. They believe the world is flat. Similar deals with religion. Religion creates tons of problems around the world. I'm worried about the way that people like to have certain categorizations to essentially separate us. We have Black Lives Matter. We have White Lives Matter. We have Women's Lives Matter. We come up with all these different reasons to separate us when we're all human beings. And people forget that. And I think going forward, we're going to need to realize that we are one civilization if we're going to succeed in overcoming climate change, which is another thing I'm a bit worried about. AI, I don't see how you can confidently say there's no way it will become sentient or conscious. I don't think you can confidently say there's no way that we'll be able to 100% contain it, because that's like my one-year-old saying, I can control my daddy. And of course, you may believe it. You may be intelligent, but when you're dealing with something that's orders of magnitude, billions of orders of magnitude more sophisticated than yourself, I think it's just arrogant to say that you understand it and understand how things will happen. We've seen in the past that humanity's reach exceeds its grasp. We can do things that we don't realize we can. Synthetic biology, incredibly exciting, also incredibly terrifying. You could be in your basement and designer plague. You can augment yourself so you're better, smarter than everyone else. I think with technology, the thing to keep in mind is technology isn't good or bad. Technology is a tool, and how we use it is a question. Atomic bombs would be great if we had an asteroid coming towards Earth and we needed to destroy it before it hit us. Suddenly it's a tool, it's not a weapon. And people forget that a lot of times when it comes to technology. They think about it as good or bad, and it's just how we use it. Social media, same deal. If we weren't so easily manipulated, and if the people that were working there weren't trying so hard to manipulate us, it would be a great tool. I use Facebook. I have a newsfeed blocker, and I just use it for messages or occasionally posting things that are basically blasts of interesting things, and that's it. For me, it works well, but for most people, it certainly doesn't.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I literally have the exact same thing on my social media, like a newsfeed blocker. But yeah, I was actually thinking yesterday, just randomly, like, what would we be like if we sort of found another planet like Earth, full of these aliens, and we kind of think of them as they'd be quite sensible and like these smart beings doing sensible stuff. If we found that they're doing the same kind of things as us and they're like all on social media and having like political debates and running businesses against each other, you'd be like, these people are friggin' retarded. What the hell are they doing? Why don't they just organize themselves and like fix their planet and stuff? And we can't really think about our own planet quite so in the same way.
I had Roel Vertigal on the program. He's a professor. He basically designed more or less the iPhone and a lot of stuff that went into it. Also those flexible paper computers, et cetera, at universities before they came out. And he said something to the effect of, if you were eating at dinner and someone ran over to you and started screaming in your face, would that be okay? Why is that okay for your cell phone to do every 30 seconds when you get a notification? And you don't really think about it because these things become culturally ingrained. But when you think about it differently, you're like, holy shit, why are we doing that? And I agree with the alien things. I think discovering a new species on another planet would be interesting because it would unify us. It would prove religion completely false. It would prove that we are in fact one species. And if it was threatening, then we'd have to unify ourselves as well, which would be something that if you look at history, you have Pearl Harbor, you have World War II, you have all of these terrible accidents, tragedies, 9/11, they unify the people that the offense happened to, so to speak. So they're bad, but they're also good, if that makes sense in a weird and twisted way.
Yeah. I had a month living with a bunch of hippies sort of in Tasmanian woods where there was no technology. And it was really nice because everyone was just like super present the whole time. And you never had a reason to not speak to people or hide yourself behind a phone. And you just sort of go around being very happy. But you get back to technology and suddenly you sit on the train, like everyone's just stuck to their phone. And you just look at humans and you start sort of seeing them as like these weird apes just being controlled by something they're totally not built for. And you see like how stupid people are and how we're totally not in control of our technology at the moment. And essentially in the future, maybe things will change a lot because we definitely have issues at the moment.
If an alien species came here, they wouldn't know if we were the rulers or the cell phones were.
Yeah, we're already like taken over by like AI kind of thing.
It's like dogs. You give them a house, you feed them, you take them for walks when they want walks. You're basically under their control, right? Same deal.
Definitely. Good analogy. Okay, so some other things that I like to ask. What is the biggest risk you've ever taken?
I guess it depends on how you define risk. Getting married is a big risk. Just that ask is like, holy cow, life changes. After graduating college, I moved to Thailand to live over in Southeast Asia while building businesses, not having a business going. That was a big risk. I would say those are the two biggest ones that stick out, definitely.
Can you go a little bit further into why it was a risk?
I mean, for most people, that seems like, holy shit, what are you doing? You're going over to live in Thailand? What? You don't have a job? What? You graduated college and you're not doing... For most people, it seems risky. For me, it wasn't that risky because it was $1,000 a month. It was super cheap and I could focus on building a business and doing the awesome stuff while I was still young. But at the same time, you're halfway across the world with essentially nothing. If something goes wrong, you're in a land where people don't speak your language. You could consider it a risk. Riding motorbikes, that was risky.
Mm.
It's fun and interesting. Yeah.
I'd say potentially riding the motorbikes out there is probably a much bigger risk, or eating some of the food on the street is maybe worse than actually trying to start a business. It's weird like the way things that you perceive risk or not, because a lot of people say that what I'm doing is really risky sometimes. And I'm like, actually, it's not that risky.
Yeah, you don't have a boss that can fire you.
Yeah, exactly. And if all goes wrong, got some good experiences, I can probably get a good job and life will be fine.
Mm-hmm. I think entrepreneurship is much less risky. Scarier, but less risky.
So you do seem to have a good growth mindset and you've certainly been doing things that challenge you. So what does having a growth mindset mean to you and how do you ensure you kind of culture it?
I think it's tough. My wife is a personal and business coach, so that's helpful in terms of pushing ourselves or pushing myself. We did a comfort zone challenge when we were living in Barcelona, and she did it for herself, and I did it along with her for a lot of them. Some of the things were like walking backwards down the street, wearing your underwear on the outside, weird stuff like that, where it's like, holy shit, that's super uncomfortable. But you do it, and you realize, okay, that's not really a big deal. So I did that. I don't do it as much now. Meditation is great for me. And in terms of growth mindset, the conversations I have on the podcast are pretty good for personal growth. I'm generally reading or listening to really interesting stuff. I think you've got to be productive to feel like you've accomplished something, but you've got to be creative to love what you're doing. Success is creativity plus productivity that makes you happy. If you're able to have both of those in your life and it makes you happy, then you're successful. It's a weird definition. So I think that strange dichotomy is what defines success. And if you're working towards that, it's what defines growth as well.
Yeah, it's a really good definition. I really like that. It's a keeper, I think. Okay, so what is the hardest thing you've ever done?
I would say from a business sense, my Amazon business. Basically, I started a business. I was living in China. I designed a standing desk that opened up the laptop case that opened to a standing desk. But I knew some people that were selling products online. And while I was working with the factory designing the desk, I had so much free time from prototyping to actual getting something in my hands that I started a home and garden line, just kind of trying to do it and sell stuff on Amazon because I knew people that were doing it successful. I ended up investing $8,000 and then building that, scaling that. I started a podcast, and for the podcast, I had the tagline, step one to seven figures. I was like, I'm going to sell this business after the year for seven figures. And I ended up doing it, and it was a ridiculous year of just pure hustle, 80-100 hour weeks, waking up or dreaming about the business at night, like every single night, and not really a social life. This was while I was in Thailand. And that was really hard and crushing in a lot of ways. I recovered from it, but that's one of the hardest things I've done.
So what was your favorite book that really helped you?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's the best book, in my opinion, when it comes to understanding human psychology and how to best get people to do what you want them to do while helping them get what they want. I think if you're good at that, then you can write great emails, you can write great sales copy, you can do a lot of things just by understanding motivations and helping people get what they want and being very transparent in how you're getting them what they want.
Really amazing book. Big fan. What quality do you want to improve at?
In my strong suits, probably motivation and effort. And my weakness is obviously the Achilles heel of that. And that's patience and relaxation. I would like to get better at unwinding a little bit. I can be rather wired and I can do a bad job of unwinding, family time, relaxing, being patient. Oh, we just launched the podcast and we're not up to XYZ. Gotta work harder. And I think that could be beneficial, but it can also be problematic.
Yeah, I definitely have some similar issues there. I went to, you know, Toastmasters, where you kind of stand up and you give speeches and things. And one of them was like, what do you do to relax? Where everyone had to go and say something. And I was like, crap, what do I do to relax? Gym feels almost like part of my agenda, which it is kind of what I'm doing to relax, but it's part of what I tick off my box.
It's a non-negotiable.
It's not like, what do I do to just treat myself 8 p.m. and unwind with my friends? I'm not sure I do that much. And trying to find some better answers for that, I think, is important.
Fiction books are always good.
It's true. You got any favorite fiction books recently?
There's so many great books. I have a lot of different themes. I like some of the spy stuff, but if you read it too much, I like sci-fi. Dune was a great book. Ian Banks is a great author, the Culture series. I like some fantasy stuff when I was younger. Aragon was probably one of my favorite books and series of all time. I like books that pull you into a different world because, like I said, I can be too focused and motivated on what I'm working on. I need something else to completely knock me into La La Land, where I can have a different perspective and be gone for a while.
Have you had Pachinko?
No.
It starts with a Korean family before the world wars, and it follows them in their move into Japan up until basically the present day. It's just really beautifully written and a bit of a tragedy. And you see how people's lives and families change over time and like how the world influences them. And it's just really interesting, like, step away from what you're used to and how lives can be. And you just compare how the lives were over the different generations of when they're growing up and the things that people seem are important and the stresses that you have compared to when you're older and different things.
For me, if it's too realistic or easy to visualize, it's not good enough. Because then you don't get pulled into a new world.
Oh, I thought it was like, it's in a world. At the start, I did feel a bit like magical and like this Korean island in the middle of nowhere with these people back and they're fishing and things. But yeah, it's still there. It's quite hard and brutal book, but I find it quite beautiful and nice. So I would recommend it. What is the kindest thing anyone has ever done for you?
I would say the kindest thing anyone's ever done for me would be, it would probably be parents. So I moved over to Thailand and they were okay with that. I used to be religious. They're very religious and I'm not at all religious anymore. And they're okay-ish with that. We moved back here to Switzerland and they got a room. We're basically staying with them for a couple months just so they can have extended time with the little guy. And they set up a room. They set up a playroom. They got these toys. They got everything ready. They redid a bunch of things. So it was just a ridiculous amount of effort. And I would say that's probably is things that parents do and have done. My dad coached all of my soccer, Boy Scouts, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's nice. Cool. Is there anything else that hasn't been asked?
Yeah, the most important thing I find for people, it's a quote, it's a way of life. There are no rules. Don't let someone give you rules. You don't have to have a job. You don't have to have a boyfriend, a girlfriend. You don't have to have a dog. You don't have to do this, do that. Whatever society tells you, you have to do. Whatever you tell yourself you have to do, whatever you tell yourself you can't do, all of that is bullshit. You can do just about anything. Don't go kill someone, but you can do pretty much anything in the world. You can become pretty much anyone as long as you're willing to understand there aren't rules and you basically write the rules of your life.
So that was a great quote to end on. If you liked it, you'll love my episode on learned helplessness. It really dives into finding these boxes that we live in completely unaware of. It's a huge eye-opener, and this is coming from the guy, me, who runs the Growth Mindset podcast, so you think I wouldn't be falling prey to these sorts of fallacies. But basically, if you're a human, you will have developed some form of self-stories about yourself that are holding you back somewhere in life, because it's just natural. So give it a listen to solve this, and try and live more by Matt's quote of just doing anything you want with your life. And now, moving on to my top tips from Matt's wisdom. Number 1. Have 10x goals and think creatively of how to get there. So just be ambitious. It's better to get halfway to $1 billion and fail than succeed in getting to $1 million. When you have massive goals, you can really surprise yourself. Now there are two ways to achieve huge success like this. You can build a business the traditional way, or you can form a movement. Depending on what you want to achieve, you might not need to become rich first just to achieve your dreams. This is a really strong point that completely relates to a different idea that I've been putting together. I'm hoping to really use this methodology to get to where I want to be with this thing that I'm launching this year, which I can't give you details on right now, but watch this space. It's going to be very exciting. Number 2. Success is creativity plus productivity. I love this definition of success. It's exactly what I'm striving for. The two things that make me happiest are when I'm being creative and when I'm being productive. When you can find something that overlaps in the sweet spot of these two, that's just perfect. So all my ideas going forwards are definitely going to be optimized for this. Number 3, health. Matt's whole attitude on life extension is awesome. The main take homes are to avoid as many carbs as possible, but perhaps don't go full on keto as it is a bit much. Just generally don't eat shit. Take cold showers, sleep well, and fast. We've both found that microfasting is probably the easiest thing, which is basically where you only eat in an 8-hour window each day, which gives you 16 hours of not eating. So for me, I have lunch at like 1 o'clock and maybe snack on some fruit in the afternoon. And then I have dinner in the evening and that's it. It's fine. It's not very difficult. After a while, it just feels incredibly easy and just like normal life. And once you get used to it, you can push for a longer fast, like a full 24 hours. Or I've even started doing a 40-hour fast, maybe once a month, which is basically just one whole day of not eating in the middle of my normal 16-hour fast. And it actually doesn't feel that difficult. It's really surprising. I pushed this really hard last week, and I did a 100-hour fast with nothing but water, which was a little bit mental, and I had some interesting results, which I will do a whole podcast on soon. But let's just say there are a lot of people advocating these extreme fasts without really useful medical advice, and I just deliberately thought I'd do an unsupported fast without really looking at the documentation or anything, just to sort of prove what would go wrong. And things went wrong. It was kind of terrible at times. And it was kind of interesting. So I think that would make a fun podcast for you all to listen to. And I might also do some more sensible ones with some science involved as well in the future. But who knows? Now onto books. His absolute all-time favorite book is How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is just an awesome book. There's so many profoundly deep lessons in this book on how to just go through life being an awesome human being, but in a way that you help everyone and everyone just likes you and will try and help you. And it makes so much sense. You just realize how the world works and that life doesn't need to be as hard or difficult as you think. And you should really read it if you haven't read it. Matt runs two podcasts, which are both great. His first is The Syndicate, where he interviews top investors on latest insights and experience. If you're interested in investing yourself, you can join his syndicate and invest in the latest startups alongside him, other top investors, and even myself. His second podcast is The Disruptors. previously called Fringe FM, where he interviews innovators, scientists, entrepreneurs, and anyone doing cool future stuff. Basically TED speakers, but in a 30-minute to hour-long interview. They've both got some great episodes, so check it out. So that's the end of the podcast. Now, we alluded to Matt successfully growing a business from 0 to 1 million and exiting in 1 year, and having 2 successful podcasts. I, of course, drilled him on these topics and his top tips for success and the failures along the way. And he just has some amazing golden advice and funny stories, which is all available on my marketing-focused podcast, Marketing Mindset. These were all mostly marketing questions, and it's a handy way for me to keep my episodes shorter. So head over to Marketing Mindset to hear more about that if you're interested.
I'm a big fan of the spray and pray mindset of figure out something that you think will work and then try everything, throw the sink, the kitchen fence, everything. No, what's a kitchen fence? You throw everything at it, and like fishing, you'll find out that almost all of the areas where you try to fish aren't going to work. But in 20% of the areas, you're going to get 80% of the results. I would say the best growth hack I have found with running the podcast has been reaching out to stupidly audacious guests, people that have no business coming on the podcast and talking to me, and reaching out to a ton of them so that some of them come on. One of my earlier podcasts, I had Seth Godin on. I had no business having Seth Godin on the podcast. I reached out to him. He said no, or why? Why should I come on? And I was like, you should come on because X, Y, Z. And he's like, okay, let's do it. And that was like, that was a watershed moment of, if you just try, the worst that can happen is a no.
You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show, or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at SamHarrisTweets or Instagram at SamJamSnaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.